Hello and welcome to Ask the Expert. I am Mindy Auslin, the founder and CEO of Network on Purpose. And this is our time to get together, take a few minutes out of your lunch break. Hopefully you got something in front of you to nibble on as we feed your mind today and help you grow your business. So this week, I am thrilled to bring a very special expert from our Fort Worth chapter. Joining us today is John Carroll. Now, John is the author of Globalization, The Leadership Challenge Ahead. He is a speaker, a wonderful coach, and he's got some really great programs coming up that we'll talk about in just a little bit. But before we do that, John, you have a lot of expertise, and what we're talking about in today's Ask the Expert lunch break is how to get more sales and profits, and that's really bottom line for most of us as business owners. So let me ask you to kick off. First, welcome to the program. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you, Mindy. I'm delighted to be here.
So let me ask you, John, the biggest challenge that entrepreneurs and business owners face today in terms of increasing sales and profits, what would you say it is? What's the biggest thing that stops us from experiencing that kind of growth?
Well, I think great question. The probably for most entrepreneurs and small business owners, I think the biggest challenge we all struggle with is time management. But if you look at time management in a broader business context, particularly as it applies to the financial side of the business, I think the biggest challenge is where and how to invest our limited resources, that being time, people, and capital, to maximize return on investment. And that's the thing that in the clients that I work with, seems to be the most troubling area where they need expertise and support.
Yeah, we get a little scattered sometimes because there's so much that, especially when you're starting a business, when you're looking to grow to the next level, there's so many things that pull for our attention. So what do you recommend? What's your best tip on how to do that? How do you decide how and where to invest your resources?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is understand the building blocks for your business at a deeper level, and that really takes you into not only examining your own financials, but also the inflows and outflows and interdependencies that represent your best business situation. We all know that for all of our businesses, there are three fundamental ways to grow the business. And Sean touched on this at our last networking mixer. First area is to raise prices. You know, that's simple, straightforward. The next area is to sell more to existing customers. And the third is to sell to new customers. You know, we talk about the foundation being that sales and profits are the magic elixirs for any business. But there are a number of things that we can do, steps to success, that we can take without diluting our resources and without getting off track that I've built into this actual presentation approach. And the key thing is to start simple and build from there, and that is by applying what I call the 10% rule to everything.
Very, very interesting. So let's start. I know a lot of us, you talk about limited resources, and finances tends to be at the top of the list in terms of what it takes to grow. What do you think is the most cost-effective way to grow a business?
Well, I think the short answer would be to raise prices. And every time I've given this presentation, I have a certain segment of the group always runs up to me and says, I'm going to go right out there and raise my prices tomorrow because that makes a lot of sense. Well, it may and it may not. It really depends on prevailing market conditions, and also if you're in a highly competitive market space, you've got to be concerned about price elasticity. And by that I mean you don't want to raise your prices to the extent that you're losing more customers out the back end, because that really doesn't help you achieve your goals. But raising prices is the first place to look, particularly if you haven't had a price increase in more than 12 months, because obviously your cost of doing business has risen during that period of time, so it's influencing your net profits. So the first thing I'd suggest, take a look at price increases and look at how that would impact your ability to achieve your top line and bottom line goals. Because increasing prices, cost effectively wise, is the easiest way to improve both top and bottom line results, because it requires little to no resource to implement. The return to the business is immediate, and it represent net dollars and net profits versus gross dollars and gross profits. The challenge we all have in growing a business organically is, in effect, you're betting on the come. And by that I mean that you're making an investment in current dollars hoping for a positive result at some future date that's predetermined or undetermined at this point in time. And that return could be 6 months, 12 months, 9 months out, but you're expending current dollars to get there. So from a net present value standpoint, that kind of financial investment doesn't yield the same results as potentially as just raising prices.
Well, you talk about raising prices as one way to grow a business. Another is to charge more to your existing customers in order to get new clients. Talk a little bit about customer retention. How do you integrate that as part of your business growth strategy?
I think the starting point is really, and it gets back to understanding those interdependencies that I touched on earlier, Mindy. First thing is understanding the lifetime value of that client relationship, because so much of the work I've seen with clients in the past has been we tend to be more transactional in terms of how we deal with those customer engagement models. And by that I mean, and I've even got a chart, I think it's chart 7 in the presentation that we're sharing with the group that depicts this, but we think of the customer in terms of a $100 transaction, when in fact, if you look at the lifetime value of that relationship, and that being the average purchase amount times the number of purchases they make over times the number of years potentially that they're a client, it's a much different relationship model. And in the example I give, you're really in effect converting a $100 transaction into a $5,400 plus client over an 11-year period of time. And if you think of in today's world, that customer's first order being $100, if you knew they were going to be worth, in financial terms, $5,400 in some future date, would you treat that relationship differently? Well, the obvious answer is yes. So it really, when you look at the relationship side, it really boils down to showing that you care by doing several things exceptionally well. First thing is staying in touch, which is important in building the relationship beyond that first or that initial sale. Second area is consistently delivering value that distinguishes you from the multitude of other people that may offer the same or similar services. And then the final thing is being responsive with support. And if once you move away from transactional selling into building that long-term value-based relationship, that's where, in the financial aspect, the biggest gains occur. And also, it also improves your retention, because the other thing that we all know is, we know a couple things. We know, first of all, that 20 to 25% of our clients represent 75 to 80% of our revenues today, and that's what is commonly referred to as Pareto's Law. The other thing that we know is it's 6 to 7 times more expensive to acquire a new customer than it is to continue to build on a relationship with an existing customer. The key to that is profitability, and that's the flip side of that conversation, because for most businesses I've seen, 50% of their customer base only yields about 5% of the net profits. So, you know, the end game for everybody is to protect and preserve and build on those profitable relationships, and in effect move more of those unprofitable customers to profitability by building the relationship the right way and making sure that you do the things you need to do to solidify that relationship. And quite frankly, there's a certain element of culling the herd that goes with building a profitable business. And, you know, let's face it, there are just some customer relationships that, for whatever reason, are not going to be profitable, and then you have a business decision as to how you move forward with them.
Well, you make a really great case, John, for the importance of staying in touch and building and expanding the existing relationship. And of course, you know, new clients are also important to be able to grow. So what percentage of the time, how would you allocate your resources in terms of, you know, how much time do you spend connecting with your existing customer base, and how much time do you spend actually going out in lead generation and cultivating new clients? What do you recommend?
At a minimum, and again, this depends, for example, if you have a very large client base, it's very hard to spend a proportionate amount of time with each one. You continue to cultivate the relationship. So you have to automate a lot of that in your how you systematize your business. But I would say at a minimum, you want to spend 30% of your time in pure business development and growth, because with one caveat, and I'll give you a great example. When Bob Allen took over as the chairman and CEO of AT&T, over a 10-year period, he divided the company into 26 strategic business units, each one with their own P&L responsibility. You have to look at both the cost of acquiring a customer and the cost of retention of a customer. What we learned through that process, because I was a director at the time, is most businesses focus a lot of their time, energy, and resource on the cost of acquiring it versus retention. And during a 10-year period of time, AT&T went from 85% market share in long distance to 51%. And all the analysts were saying, oh, my gosh, AT&T is in free fall. What was interesting about that is that 10-year period, even though we lost over 30% market share in long distance, it was the 10 most profitable years in AT&T's history. Why? Because they found that there are a lot of not only customers, but actual markets where we couldn't operate. So we got out of those markets and we shed that market share. Well, what happened? MCI and Sprint at the time were buying market share. And what do you do when you buy market share? You discount your pricing. So they were, in effect, buying clients at a loss that were expensive clients to maintain. So you have to look in terms of allocating your time and resource. How big is my client base today? Because is it 5,000 clients or 50 clients? If it's 50, it's easier to spend a smaller amount of time on those clients to yield the kind of results you need to achieve your targets. And you can spend more time on pure business development and need to in order to continue to grow the business, if that makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense, and it's a great illustration of that. Again, we're talking with Don Carroll. Don is the author of Globalization, the Leadership Challenge Ahead, and we're talking today in our Ask the Expert lunch break about how to get more sales and profits now, how to use the resources you have. If you are joining us during our live call today, one, we welcome you. Thank you for joining us. If you have any questions for Don throughout our lunch break, you are welcome to raise your virtual hand by hitting *6 on your telephone at any time, and that lets me know that you have a question to share with John. We would love to hear from you if you have a question. And again, John has been referencing a presentation. As we put this up on our website at networkonpurpose.com and into our archives, you will get a download to this presentation that John has, which has so much information. It has more information than we can actually include in a 30-minute overview. John, I know there's a lot of really rich content that you share with people. Let me ask you, where should we focus our strategies to gain the maximum results in growing our business? What do you recommend?
Again, it depends on the composition of the business, and I don't think from my vantage point, maybe there's one single answer, you know, no magic bullet, if you will. It really gets back to utilizing the network on purpose mantra, what if up, what if up, and then apply the 10% rule to everything. For example, start with the basics. What if, in order to meet our revenue and financial goals, we increased our prices by 10%? What would be the impact of that to our business in terms of the end result at the end of our fiscal year period, in terms of top-line revenue growth? And again, to my earlier point, Mindy, what impact would that have potentially on customer losses, because again, we don't want to lose customers out the back door while we're trying to increase revenues.
Right.
Second, what if we increased sales by 10%, again, after we've had a 10% price increase? What's the impact of that? What if we increase our customer base by 10% by doing some additional promotions, discounts, spiffs, et cetera, to drive more demand and incent not only our current customers to buy more and buy more often, but also new customers to purchase our products and services? And while we're going through all that, what if we reduced our sales cycle by 10%? Our average day sales, what if we cut it from 90 days to 81 days? What's the impact? And what if we extend the life cycle of that business relationship by doing more of the right things the right way to not only augment that relationship but continue to build it and grow it? And what if we were able to, by building stronger strategic partnerships with our suppliers, to drive 10% of the cost out of our business through our supply chain? And what if we were able to, with technology, upgrades, et cetera, reduce our operational efficiency by 10%.
Mm.
Now, all those slides aren't included in the presentation because I pared it down, but if you wrap all of those what if 10% elements into the context of your business, the real question you have to ask yourself is, do I need to spend any more money in other areas to meet my goals? I would submit for most of us the answer would be no.
You would say the answer is no, that we could do all those things without necessarily having to outline more financial resources.
Exactly. And again, to my earlier point, organic growth is expensive because, in effect, you're using current dollars and hoping for a payoff down the road. So that's all something. So back to your question, where would you focus the strategy? I would start with the 10% rule and look at that. Again, look at all the inflows and outflows of your business and the interdependencies of each one of those moves in terms of the overall impact. And it can be significant. In the case of this actual presentation, to give people a little bit of a backdrop, this is actually built off of a live client scenario. Client's been working with me for about 18 months now. They've had record sales and profits, and we implemented this 10% rule in a lot of the areas of their business to get them to that point.
That's wonderful. I want to welcome all of you again who are joining us through our live webinar, those of you who are both on the phone and tuned in through our webcast. As a reminder, if you're on the phone and you have a question for John, you can hit *2 to raise your hand and ask a question. Questions from our webcast, you can see there is a Q&A online, and we want to welcome you. Wendy, thanks for your question. The slides, that the presentation that John's referring to, we're going to put that in a download that we're going to send to you in a follow-up. It's also going to be posted on our website, so you'll get to see all of John's presentation. And John, this is a presentation that you've given lots of different places. It has a lot of information, way more than we could cover in 30 minutes, so we're kind of hitting the highlights here. I love your what ifs. I love the idea of breaking it down into, you know, what if we increase prices? What if we increase sales? What if we increase our customer base? What if we reduce our sales cycle? All really great scenarios to play through. Do you think that's the sequence? Is that where we should start? Should we start with prices and then go to sales and then customer base? Is that a sequence, or does it kind of depend on what's happening in our business as it is right now?
Yeah, it depends on what's happening in your business, because the client scenario I referenced, they hadn't had a price increase in over 3 years. So the obvious place for us to start was with pricing. They had over 5,000 clients, both on the retail side and the business side. So they have a very large client base. And the first thing I did with them before we had our first actual coaching session was I asked them to raise prices by 10% across the board to see what kind of reaction they got, because they were dramatically below market pricing with the analysis done. And out of over 5,000 clients, only one even noticed it.
Wow. That's a great success story.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, and again, to my point earlier, Mindy, if you haven't had a price increase by in the last 12 months, you're actually – diluting your net profits because your cost of business has probably gone up, I would guess, anyway, unless you're doing a great job with supplier management.
So that's a great strategy. John, can you give us some more examples, like the, not necessarily the names of individuals or businesses, but just some sort of case studies to see how all of this could be implemented in a growing business?
Sure. I think the where it has the largest impact is obviously where you have a large client base today, but that doesn't mean those impacts can't be as dramatic in a smaller business. One of the things I, when I talked about culling the herd, although that's probably not a real favorable client relationship term, it's a business reality term. If you've got unprofitable customers, one of the examples you'll see with price increases is what if you raise your prices by 30%? Well, you could almost, in that scenario, with a large client base, you could almost triple your net profits based on, you know, what your overheads are in terms of COGS and so forth, your cost of goods sold and your sales and marketing expense. But in that particular example, if you really do a deep dive on it, Mindy, you could actually lose 30% of your client base and still have more net profits than you're receiving today.
Right.
So it gets back to less equals more. You know, the other part of this that I didn't touch on is the 10% rule. Also, I factor into that less equals more. You know, the alphabet, for example, today for any business, the alphabet is A to Z. It's 26 steps to a perfect outcome. Correct. Well,
yes.
What if you could, you know, by applying less equals more, what if you could make that rather than 26 steps, 25 steps?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the things you have to do to get it to 25? And once you get it to 25, what do you need to do in terms of your operational effectiveness to get it to 24 and 23? And so, and it's constantly peeling back the onion. It's an iterative process that looks at strategy. It looks at alignment in terms of resources and costs. It looks at alignment in terms of markets and revenue sources. And it's really looking at, from an investment play, if you've got multiple channels, like many businesses do, that represent revenue streams and costs, are you optimized or sub-optimized in any one of those categories? If you are, then you have to look at root cause as to why that's occurring and try to take corrective action, or maybe, like the example with AT&T, maybe it's a market that you ought to shut down and redeploy those resources to maximize your return on investment.
I see. That's really great information, John, and I thank you for being with us today to share your 10% rule. You know, we've been talking a lot about strategies that really can increase your profits now. I mean, these are things, you increase your prices and then there's the profit right now. Talk a little bit about sales, because part of this is about how do you get more sales and profit. What are some ways, some techniques and strategies that you recommend to increase market share, to get more sales? What's your best strategy for that?
Best strategy there is to, you know, if you really have a strong database, is looking at your customer history and buying preferences. And by that I mean if you have multiple products, there are a number of things you can do to augment not only the average sale value and the timing of those sales, but also strengthen the relationship, such as upsells, cross sales, back-end product sales, you know, the old Amazon scenario. Oh, the people that bought this book also bought these two, and oh, by the way, if you buy these additional two books today, we'll give you a 10% discount on the total
mm-hmm.
sale. That's
mm-hmm.
a way to drive additional demand, profits, and you're, you know, offering a very nominal discount to acquire two additional sales at the same time. Offering upgrades and additional services and a lot I call value bundles is another way to not only bundle price increases but bundle value into that premium pricing to where now I can buy from you multiple things to where maybe in the past I had two or three different vendor relationships to acquire those multiple products. Now by wrapping that value bundle together, I can buy two or three products in a bundle for less cost than I would if I tried to buy each product individually. So you get, in effect, you get that client coming to the feeding trough more often for more things by delivering that additional value dimension. And again, you can charge a premium for that. You know, a lot of people when I talk about price increases, they go, ooh, well, I'm concerned that I'll lose customers. Well, you might. You just have to do market testing there to determine that, of what that price sensitivity looks like. But the other factor is most research studies I've seen say that clients are willing to pay up to 40% more for a premium solution or a high-value brand. For you ladies out there, Gucci bags. You know, why does anybody pay that money for a handbag? Or why do people drive Mercedes or Lexus? Because they're connected to that brand. The other thing that's interesting when you start wrapping value bundles and solutions, if the perception of the client is that the total sale net price is free, then price goes off the board. In other words, if I can show you a way today by spending $5 million with me, write me a check for $5 million, and I will show you a $150 million return on that investment within 12 months. Would you write me that $5 million check if you had it?
Right.
The answer is obviously yes. So
if the net
price by cost justifying that with a payback that's within a 9 to 12-month window, which is reasonable, net price is actually a positive return, price is insignificant.
Yeah.
I
think this is great thing to think about as we're growing our businesses and we're looking to increase that bottom line, and sales is definitely one of the tools that lets us do that. John, I know that you coach people one-on-one on exactly how to implement these strategies and track these strategies, as well as offering group coaching and, of course, speaking. Tell us a little bit about the mastermind that you have coming up. We have just a few minutes left. Tell us what that is and how that can support people in growing their business.
Be happy to. The mastermind program is called the Business Leaders Forum. Mindy, I actually developed the program from a focus group that I ran when I first launched the business 3 years ago, and got a lot of feedback from potential coaching clients on what they were looking for as business leaders, both in terms of their own personal and professional growth. Since I launched the program a little over 2.5 years ago, we've run 4 sessions. The initial session from the focus group was 12 months. Second session was 18 months. Third session was 21 months. The last session was 18 months. The next session I'm going to be launching is going to be 12 months. I'm going to launch that in September. We generally start with 12 business leaders. It's by invitation and application only. You go through an interview process with me, and that's there to make sure that the program is a good fit for what you're trying to accomplish business-wise, and also to really make sure the level of commitment's there, because half of what we do in building an entire ecosystem for your business that'll help you scale and systematize the things that are fundamental to your success is the diversity aspect and making sure we have people with broad industry backgrounds. We have everything from former C-level executives to network marketers.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody in those groups are high achievers, very success-based, and it's important to get a lot of feedback with the accountability aspect from the group members to make sure that you're well-grounded in terms of the challenges you face in developing solutions to those challenges, as well as how do you go to market and how do you go to market differently based on the input from the group. So a lot of interaction there. I would characterize it as not a book club. It's a mini MBA program. We have a lot of homework. We have journal articles. We have books. We have case studies and accountability exercises to work on every month.
Fascinating. Well, Don, I thank you for joining us for our Ask the Expert lunch break. And again, Don Carroll is a member of our Fort Worth chapter of Network on Purpose. So come join us in Fort Worth anytime, and you can sit at a table with Don and pick his brain and learn all kinds of expertise from him. And I thank you for not only being one of our experts, but being one of our members. And thank you so much for all that you give. He is the author of Globalization, The Leadership Challenge Ahead, as well as a speaker, a coach, and like I said, a great mastermind coming up as well. Thank you all for tuning in, for calling in, for listening to our webcast, or for listening to our archives. However you may have found us, we hope this has been a lunch break well spent. And thank you for tuning in. And we invite you, of course, if you're not a member of Network on Purpose, come check us out and see what we're about. Lots of great expertise, all designed to help you and your business as you build relationships with all the amazing experts in your local area. You can get more information at www.networkonpurpose.com. I'm Mindy Audlin, the founder and CEO of Network on Purpose. Thank you again, John Carroll, and we look forward to talking to you next time. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care.